Hi everyone, it's Deb. Welcome to the final session of our Starving for God workshop, looking at step 12 and what's next. And this has been such an honor to be with you during these last 6 months, whether you are current with the work or whether you are still catching up or whether you're going to be doing this at another time on another day. It's been an absolute honor, and I'm super grateful that you are here on this call, however you're listening to it. So let's find out who else is actually on the live call today. I know there's a couple people that are joining in a little while, but who do we have right now?
Hi, Jan W. from Burbank.
Jan, hi.
Howdy.
Suzanne in California.
Hi, Suzanne.
Hi.
Hey.
Deb T. from San Diego.
Hi, Deb. The other people just not want to announce themselves. I know we've got other people on the call, but that's okay. I'll get started. So I would love for us actually just to go into some prayer and meditation. I will, in the playback email that I send out, I will probably mention this again, but I have had some requests about, because I've been saying this whole workshop, the next workshop I do is going to be on chaos creating, and I definitely want to do that. And what I'm feeling guided to is not like going right into that, and perhaps doing that next year or starting at the end of this year. So that will be something. And if you're interested, let me know, I guess, and I can kind of keep your email on standby for that announcement. And also, this whole workshop is available on bdaworks.com, so you can listen to all of the audios. And I'm also on my personal website, debbielichter.com. There goes my anonymity. I am going to be putting a special section. It's like a free members-only section. And it's for people in recovery. Everything on there is free, but it's going to have this whole workshop, and it's going to have the archive of all of the recordings, like all of those little like 5-minute audio recordings or 8-10 minute audio recordings or whatever they were that some of you said that you liked. So if you're interested in that, I will be doing a follow-up email when that website is live. I just want to clarify, it is a website for me as a coach, but I do have a section on it that's free. So I just want to be really, really clear about that so people aren't confused. I do sponsor people, and I don't charge people for sponsorship, and I'm also a coach, and that's a whole other story. So the section that is on the website for people in recovery to just use and access and download recordings is totally free. Okay. That is all I will say about that, and you'll probably get follow-up emails. And with that said, let's go into some prayer and meditation. Let's start with the third step prayer and go into a couple minutes of meditation. So God, I offer myself to Thee to build with me and to do with me as Thou wilt. Relieve me of the bondage of self that I may better do Thy will. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them may bear witness to those I would help with Thy power, Thy love, and Thy way of life. May I do Thy will always. Okay. So this is just so perfect, I feel like, as we move into step 12, because it really brings us full circle back into step 1. And for me, it just always reminds me that this is not a graduation. It might feel really, really good, and I feel like it's a graduation because a lot has shifted, but this is a cycle. And, you know, I was thinking about that today, and it's like, well, just like we don't graduate from winter into spring, you know, we experience the cycles in nature of death and rebirth, and in the same way, we experience, like, the natural cycle of our own recovery. And that's really why I do all 12 steps every year, and I take others through in workshops like this, and I do some one-on-one, because even though right now I feel sunny, you know, like, I need to develop the spiritual fitness because, like, a day and a time is going to come, and I need to be able to weather the storm of whatever comes in my life, you know, and that is the grace that we get in this program, is that we have tools now to handle whatever comes our way. And so I continue to stay in all three areas of the circle and the triangle, and of course that includes the service piece. And I was at a retreat yesterday, and I heard this great, like, it kind of comes out of the world of personal development, but, you know, sometimes there's some interesting things that are said there. And it said, we either have reasons or results. You know, we either have, like, excuses for why not, reasons, or we have, like, results. And it's interesting because when it comes to the 12th step, when people aren't working with us, it's like I hear this all the time. I hear people saying, like, yeah, but I'm not clean with my food, so I can't take someone through, or I don't have anything to offer, or, like, you know, there's this kind of thing. And I actually say, you're absolutely right. Like, you don't. You on your own power don't have anything to offer. Me on my own power, I don't have anything to offer. I can't be of real help. And you know, that unmanageability is only treated by the spiritual treatment of God. So, like, with God's power, you have everything to offer. It's simply about getting out of the way and letting God move through you. That's what I do when we meditate. I mean, it's like this conversation with God where I'm like, God, move through me. Get me out of the way. And sometimes I actually, you guys can't see me, but sometimes I actually, my body kind of goes like loose and flaccid, and I actually kind of like lean back in my chair because it's actually, it's like, it just get me out of the way and just move through me and speak through me and deliver your love and your power and your compassion and your healing through me as a channel. And so, you know, whether you're working with someone as a step partner, whether you're working with them as a sponsor, whether you're just, you know, chatting with a newcomer at a meeting or calling a newcomer on the phone, like we have the ability in each moment to call God in as if God's not already there. But I mean, but to consciously call God in, align our will with God's, and then just be of service for whoever's in front of us. And so that's a grace that we get as a result of just doing this program. And it's like, it's again, it's having the humility to recognize that God is doing everything. And sometimes, like, my not working with others is actually coming from more of a selfish place than I would actually think. So, like, I'm just kind of glancing at my notes here. You don't have to have it all figured out. So that's the beautiful thing about the 12 steps, I feel, is that you don't have to have it all figured out to be and be, like, be working the perfect program in order to, like, in order to be taking someone, you know, in order to be a sponsor. I don't feel, I mean, because I don't work a perfect program, and I'm not perfect, and I don't have it all figured out. In fact, the more I do this work, the more I realize I don't have anything figured out. And so it keeps me in that place of honesty and you know, surrender. But that's a beautiful place to be. And what I have found is that in my program, whenever I'm speaking to anyone in program, like whether it's someone at a meeting or whether like someone, you know, it's a reach out call or, you know, I'm like sitting down with a step partner or a sponsee, whatever the topic of conversation is or whatever I'm guided to share with that person, like maybe they're coming to me for, you know, like advice, you know, and I don't give advice, but I will ask them a question typically, or I'll say, you know, this is a consideration or a suggestion. Whatever comes through me to say is 100% of the time something I needed to hear from my program, and I need to actually follow that very suggestion. Or I needed to hear that person's question, or I needed to experience whatever someone said in a meeting. Like, it's always like that, and I know I'm not alone. I know many of you experience that too, where you're like, wow, the words that actually came to my mouth are something that I need to hear. And so, you know, I see the people that come into my life in all of my affairs, but particularly in recovery, as reflections for where I need to grow. And so I get to interact with every friend in program as a spiritual teacher. And, like, whether that person has 30 years of recovery or whether they have 30 minutes of recovery, like, that's how I do it. And when I see the people around me as spiritual teachers, my whole attitude and outlook changes. Like, there's no me needing to be senior or, you know, like holier than thou, like an attitude of holier than thou, like they talk about in the book. You know, I just have, like it says in the book, just that sincere desire to help. And as that grace flows through me to share something or to offer something, I'm actually the one that gets the healing. I'm the one that gets the message. It's incredibly powerful. And I wasn't able to get freedom from food, to get the freedom that I wanted, until I began working with another overeater, restrictor person. And I didn't think I had anything to offer. But it was in doing it that I gained the power to do it. It's just like what we've said with all of the other steps. It's like, I don't think that I have the power to get through my fourth step, or I don't think that I have the power to do a fifth, or to, you know, to give everything over to God, or to do my amends, or to work with another. It's like all of these things. It's like, I'm like, ah, or even, you know, the third step, like just like this decision. Like, it's like, I don't have the power. But we get the power. We get the grace. God meets us in the moment when we fully, fully, like, leap into it, when we fully dive into it. And that's what I've experienced. And then God doesn't just, like, meet me with what I need. Like, God, like, up-levels that to, like, way more grace, way more freedom, way more love, way more joy, way more happiness than, like, I ever thought possible. And the bigger the leap, like, the more freedom. And so, like, for example, since doing this workshop with you all, I have been catapulted into, like, an entirely new level of freedom and happiness. Like, you have no idea what you've done for me in my program. I get, you know, calls and messages from people who are like, thank you for the work you're doing. I'm like, you've got no idea. Like, I'm the one that has benefited so much from this. You know, so really, like, bottom line is, if you want to get more freedom with food and also just in every area of your life than you ever thought possible, like, it's only by taking someone through the steps and continuing to take people through and continuing to be in your program that you're going to access that freedom. Like, if you're not doing it, you haven't completed the steps. You know, in my meditations earlier today, as I was prepping for the call, I got this image of replanting the seeds of my recovery. So it's like, now I have this awakened spirit, you know, because I followed the instructions and I've done everything they've told me in the book, and I have gone out and I've taken this inventory and I've gone out into the world and I have repaired the damage that I've done out there, and it has like catapulted me into this experience, and I'm continuing to enlarge my spiritual life in 10 and 11, and I have this realm of the spirit experience. I'm trusting my intuitive guidance. I've got that sixth sense. You know, I have this new attitude, because remember that attitude that we started to get in our inventory in step 4, like to see things from an entirely new angle is the key. It's this new attitude that I get in the process of 4 or 5, and I have these new tools that I can rely on, and I get to practice these tools every single day. And I have this new relationship with my creator, this decision that I made in step 3 that's now become a way of life in step 11. And so now I can take all of this beautiful, just like spiritual growth, and I can replant the seeds of all of my spiritual recovery. I can plant it like back into my foundation. You know, like we get this image of this structure, this foundation. In Bill's story, he talks about uprooting. We talked a lot about that in step 4. Root and branch, everything needs to be pulled up. So it's like now I'm like replanting. And I get to continue to water and nurture these seeds, you know, these tools and this relationship, so that they can grow into like the strong and stable foundation and structure of my life. And that happens, you know, I grow both through like, I want to say like the good stuff and the bad stuff, but it's more like my spiritual fitness and my spiritual sickness. You know, so like I continue to grow and like reach new heights and new depths of freedom and recovery and hope and peace and ease and all these things. But for me, like, it comes as I continue to clean house. It comes as I continue to watch. I keep on saying throughout this whole workshop, like being like standing on the corner of hope and hopelessness. I straddle those two worlds, but not in a way to keep myself down, but rather in a way that is super empowering, because like for me, my recovery and my freedom comes from my ever evolving, ever improving ability to trust God and to continue to experience God's love of me, which I then experience as my love of myself. Like I actually like myself and love myself today, while I continue to clean house daily. I continue to look for where am I in agnostic temperament? Where am I still blocking God? Where am I still having a first step experience? And what I got to actually see yesterday and was considering in my 10-step review, I really got to swallow some hard chunks of truth about myself, because, and it's great because it's actually launched me into a new level of commitment with my program, but I really realized yesterday that I have been pretending to myself that I'm working a good program and doing everything that I can and that I'm checking off all the boxes, you know, and a lot of that has to do with the reflections I get from other people at me, like, oh, you know, like, and it starts to like kind of go to my head. I'm like, oh yeah, everything's, I'm great. I'm doing great. And yet the truth is that I've become lazier and more undisciplined. Well, I was always lazy and undisciplined. In fact, that's what I used. That was my solution, was food and dieting and drugs and overworking and like lots of other acting out behaviors to try and keep me in line and disciplined. I was trying to control myself because I knew intrinsically that I was undisciplined and lazy and that I didn't have the power to do any different. Because I knew I didn't have the power to do any different because when I tried, it always came out in like a really, really toxic way, like controlling, demanding, forcing, overworking, rigid, stubborn, arrogant, self-righteous, pushing, efforting, And, I realized yesterday when I was in this, wow, oh my gosh, I have been really in delusion in this area. I don't know how to be disciplined without God. And, it tells us that on page 88. It's we look to God for that. It says, we overeaters and restrictors are undisciplined, so we let God discipline us in the simple way we have just outlined. I really, really need God for discipline. Because I have allowed my, I've been buying into the delusion that I'm committed to changing, that I'm willing to do anything, to go to any lengths, that I'm giving it all to God, that I'm not clinging, and all this stuff. And it's what I got to see yesterday when I just asked God to help me see the truth was a big bullshit. And, I can see now, and it's interesting because I can kind of plug it back into this tree inventory thing that we were talking a lot about in step four. It's I can see, okay, I've got this unwillingness to change and this laziness of my program and this kind of cutting corners. And so, so I get to see, okay, these are the selfish actions that are up here. And so they're attached to these selfish attitudes, right? So I'm okay, what are these selfish attitudes? And some of the selfish attitudes that are coming up, I'm already doing so much, my victim, everyone thinks that I'm grand, so obviously I'm doing fine, the way that I'm doing it, that kind of sense of entitlement. Or some deeper stuff that I got to see, some deeper truths, I don't want to compromise what I want to do. I don't want to dedicate that much time to prayer and meditation and service. I'm busy, and I want results without having to change anything. That's the truth of what's still going on, because I still have to treat my spiritual malady on a daily basis. This is the stuff that starts to literally eat away at us, And then it goes even deeper, right? Because that's those are the branches, right? And then that's branching out of deeper delusions. I'm in the delusion I'm not as sick as others. I'm in the delusion that I don't need to change anything. I'm in the delusion that God should work in my life because of my incredible track record of service and dedication, and I shouldn't have to give any more of myself to God. This is the stuff that is deep, deep down, right? And then it's rooted in this fear. And so I get to look at the fear of completely letting go of my identity. The good stuff, the bad stuff, all my stuff. My physical stuff, my actual physical, things, right? My emotions, my body, my thoughts, my routine, my pain, my pleasure, my comfort, my treats, my safety nets, my loved ones, my work, my life purpose, my eating, my health, my fitness, my conduct and relationships, everything, right? Everything that I am and everything that I'm clinging to. And as much as I think that I'm willing to let all that go, I'm still attached. And so for me, I want more freedom and more happiness. I just told you, you all have catapulted me into this new level of joy and happiness and freedom, and I'm seeing all of these incredible miracles and blessings in my life. And I also get to see, and there are all these areas where you still get to grow, and that's okay today. It reinvigorates my program, but what's beautiful is that with the grace of God today, practicing a code of love and tolerance actually applies to me as well. And so I don't, it's not this like self-flagellating, like, oh, I'm still so sick and I'm still so effed up and da 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 da, and kind of like, it's like, no. I'm like, wow, there's so much opportunity for growth. And for me then, recovery started out as, wow, I'm like doing this because I'm just like super, super sick and can't stop. And I still get to see that, the desperateness. But for me, it like transitions into, this is just my spiritual path. This is, I'm doing recovery as a spiritual path. And, you know, it's really beautiful because it continues to open up and it continues to blossom. And I continue to bring more willingness and honesty and open-mindedness into my program. So being able to work with another person allows me to stay in the experience of, oh, yeah, I really need this work too. Oh, yeah, I'm seeing myself reflected back in this person's first step experience. Where is that happening in my life today? I can relate to what it was like, but where is it, what is happening right now, and is there something I need to look at? And can I look at that with the compassion and the love that is me and that flows through me, because God is me and God flows through me? And can I still get honest at the same time? Because healing and change and recovery happen through God's love, not through my self-imposed judgment and criticism. That's not how it works. And so my commitment to continuing doing the steps every year is my commitment to spiritual growth and evolution. And it goes through the pathway of me looking at where I'm blocked. And so what I do in sponsorship is, you know, typically like where I meet someone. I mean, I know we're going to go into the book in a moment, and there's a lot that's in the, I mean, this is a very, very long chapter, and I encourage you to read through it and transcribe it. And but there are some things in here that I personally do differently, and I'll share about that. And I feel like we're living in a different time right now, where we have access to people who are looking for the solution in any meeting. And so we can really be of a lot of service by, yes, going to recovery homes and, you know, like being of service in other ways. But I typically meet people at meetings, or I get a call from someone. And I love, I mean, hands down, if I'm committed to doing the steps every year, like I will be taking a group through. And a group can be, you know, when I first was taking groups through, it started with just like a few people, like just maybe two other people. It actually did start with two other people. And it was just, I was doing the work with them, and there was two other people, because there are so many people who are suffering with food issues and restricting and dieting issues. And so I just always operated on the notion that I'm not the one that's getting these people free. Like, God's getting these people free. So we're all in this together. And, you know, like, yes, I've been through it, so I have a little bit more of an understanding of the process and of what's to come, and I can be a guide in that way. But I'm not responsible for their recovery. And so in that way, it really opened me up to just do the work with them. And so I'll take a group through. But I also take one-on-one through, and I do the work with them. And it just, like, I'm never doing the step work just me by myself. I'm always going to be taking someone else through it, and I find that the experience is much better for them and for me. And so when I do groups now, I read my Idiot's Guide. I'll just select a newcomer in the group, and I will use them as my step partner. I don't, you know, and I actually had my sponsor call me on this because I would finish the steps and I kept on wanting to like go to someone in our fellowship who I was like, oh, this person is like so incredible. This person will have the, you know, like I want to do the steps with this person. I want to do the steps with this person because like this person, you know, speaks really well at the meetings and I want their, you know, I want what they have and I want to do. And she was like, stop it already. Like you're grasping for what, you know, like this illusion of, oh, if I work with somebody who I think is like this great spiritual teacher in my program, like I'm going to get the recovery that I need. And it's like, that's actually placing a little bit more importance on the person than on God. And so what actually works really well for me is, doing my idiot's guide and my like reading my questions and whatever and reading the book with a newcomer. And then if I want to do my fifth step with my sponsor or with somebody who has some more experience in that way, or I want to consult on my steps 8 and steps 9, then I go ahead and I do that. And, you know, there's plenty of people. If you reach out to, like, if you go to bbaworks.com and you reach out to any of the contact people there, I mean, you can get hooked up with someone if there's not someone in your area who you know. You can get hooked up with someone who will listen to your fifth step and who will help you. And, you know, it might be me, it might be somebody else, but there's plenty of people who have done this work who have incredible recovery who can help you out. And just be open to that. But definitely, it totally works for me to work with a newcomer. I still get an incredible experience because at the end of the day, like, it's my relationship with God. And I follow the sponsorship guide, just like I did with you all in this workshop. So it takes 6 months for me to do the work with others and with myself, and it's just all laid out there. So everything that we did in this workshop, I mean, what I would recommend if you liked what you heard, I mean, if you're listening to this call, then you probably have liked some of the stuff that you heard. But I would really recommend that you use this workshop, like get together with your people that you're doing the step work with, and either maybe all of you have listened to this particular, you know, the assigned recording alone, like as part of your preparation, or you come together and you listen to it together and then you have your own discussion afterwards. But just like I mentioned in the very, very beginning, I do it exactly the same when I'm working with somebody one-on-one. You know, I'm going to let them know that this is about a 6-hour-a-week commitment in terms of transcribing that they're going to do, in terms of the idiot's guide stuff, and then the meeting with me or the small group of people. And like, it's a big deal and it's not for everyone. And that's something that I had to come to terms with, is that the BBA is not for everyone. And some people just don't want that much work, and that's totally okay. And I bless them on their journey and I'm not the sponsor for them. I'm also not the sponsor. I don't consider myself a food sponsor. If somebody feels guided, if they take the prayer and meditation, they want to commit their food on a daily basis, and they want to send it to me because it helps them with their accountability and I'm working with them, I'm like, fantastic, send it to me, and that's great. Like, I will be that container to receive, absolutely. So if it's something that somebody feels guided to do, sure thing. I'm just, you know, such a fan of you just checking in with God and being guided and doing what you're guided to do. And I also, I like to always be working with someone who's in their first 3 steps. So it just keeps me close to my first 3 steps. And it just works for me that way. And that was it wasn't really advice that I got, but it was a comment that I heard somebody else make in one of the BBA meetings. And I was like, huh, that makes a lot of sense for me. That's something that I want to integrate into my program. And it does, because it's really easy for me to go into that place of like, oh, I've got so many sponsees, but it's like, actually, many of them aren't actively doing the work with me, you know, like maybe they did the steps with me and now there's just kind of like on like a maintenance type deal. And that's cool too. I don't count them as sponsees per se if they've completed the steps with me. I consider them friends in program. And, you know, and of course I'm there for them if they need to, like, read inventory, like a 10-step inventory or a proper 4-step, 5th-step inventory, or just do a check-in. I'm totally available for that. But I like to be working with a newcomer. So, like, for example, I've just started working with a new person 2 weeks ago. And even though I was, like, not doing any more stuff, you know, for the rest of the year, like, I need to take a break, but that doesn't mean that I'm not always going to be doing, you know, like, working with, like, one person, because I need that for to be in my step 12, and I need that for my own recovery and to be fulfilling the circle and the triangle. So for me, service, that service component, we talked about this in the very, very beginning, but that service component, that is in the circle and the triangle, like it's important to not confuse the service that I do in my fellowship, like being a secretary or, you know, helping, you know, with chairs or like that kind of stuff versus like the service side of the triangle that really is about me taking my awakened spirit out into the world and working with others. And that's really important. And the last thing that I'm going to say, I'm sure there's a lot of things that I could say before getting into the book, but the last thing that's coming to me to share is something actually about self-care. Because I had come to realize, and this was a huge, huge thing for me, that I spent a lot of time in prayer and meditation with God on, and I think it was even like the theme of my year in 2010 and 2011, was asking God to help me delineate the distinction between being selfish and self-care. Because I grew up in a household where self-care was selfish, and I didn't know, I was always called selfish. I didn't know what was what, and so I threw the baby out with the bathwater, and anything that felt like self-care was like minimized. And so that like prompted and propelled me into workaholism and all the ways that I was abusing my body and, you know, sleep deprivation and a whole host of other things, you know, of course, including all the ways I was acting out with food and with my body. And so self-care is service. I've come to realize that. And the way that you care for your body and your mind and your spirit is service. And so as we get into this reading today, you know, there's some pages here where it talks a little bit about maybe like some of the things that they used to do about, you know, like inviting people into my home and giving them money and, you know, and like doing these things. There's kind of some stuff I'll probably point out. I have really, really, part of my self-care is having really clear boundaries with myself, with my sponsees. You know, it's really, really important for me because I have gone into overdrive with the service piece. And I have been, like, losing myself in service. And, like, when I realized that service is also my self-care and that putting my own oxygen mask on first before I put my oxygen mask on the others that I'm helping is vital. It literally is life-giving, just like the way it would be in an airplane going down. Like, it is life-giving for me. And so I need to do that. And I encourage you to as well. So, moving into this chapter, I'm not going to go page by page. I'm just going to highlight some stuff, and then I want to turn the call into a discussion and have people share and ask questions and just have kind of a discussion around this topic and around anything that I've talked about over the last almost hour. So starting on page 89 here, the first two paragraphs are like super compelling, you know, and I get to turn it into a question, like, has my practical experience shown me that nothing I do for myself will ensure immunity from acting out with food in my body as much as intensive work with another? Well, actually, that's just the first question. Has my experience shown that nothing I do for myself can ensure immunity from acting out with food? Like, that's really a compelling question to ask. And do I believe that intensive work with other compulsive eaters and restrictors works even when other activities fail? And I've experienced that over and over again, and I have heard that over and over again. I was speaking with a friend in program who has like 20 years of recovery, who when she first did the work through BBA, through her drugs and alcohol, it actually removed her compulsive overeating as well. Like, that was lifted. And as long as I knew her for those first few years that I was in program or in BBA, she didn't have a problem. And then it like came back with a vengeance. And she then had like a really, really big problem, and it was like such a huge, you know, she just wasn't getting free. And so she started doing the steps. And for her and her experience, and this, I don't see this happen with everyone, this happens with someone, but I just want to point it out because this might be you. And this doesn't have to be you, but this might be you, and I just want to share some hope. She finished her step 12, and she was still acting out. And it was only when she started working with other people and started to go through the experience herself, like it was only in that experience of working with others that it started to, that her physical craving and mental obsession began to lift. And in my experience too, it gets better and better. Every time I do the steps, I get freer and freer, and that's what I want to hear from some of you on the call, because I know you've already had some freedom. And so it really, really works when other activities fail. And the transcription that we get in the next sentence says, this is our 12th suggestion, and it says, there is no choice here. This is the 12-step plan of action. This is our 12th, like, action step, is to carry the message. And the next paragraph, like, life will take on new meaning to watch people recover, to see them help others, to watch loneliness vanish, both in myself and others, by the way, to see fellowship grow up about you, to have a host of friends. This is an experience you must not miss. It's incredible, and I know those of you who are working with others have this experience, but on any given day, I can be like, whoa, I am feeling lonely today. I'm feeling self-pity. I am, like, in my thoughts. I'm in my shit. I am, like, feeling, like totally stressed by all the stuff that I think that I have to do. And I just need, like, a lifeline. I need to be pulled out of the mire and the muck of my own shit, my own chaos. And the best way to do that is to, like, pick up the phone and call one of you, or you know, to have those regular meetings with sponsees and with people in the program. This is an experience you must not miss. You just won't want to. And that's actually the next sentence. We know that you will not want to miss it. Frequent contact with newcomers, right? That's the service piece, and with each other is the bright spot of our lives. And so, and it really is. And you know, it's interesting because in our fellowship in San Diego, we have, like, I mean, it's incredible what has sprung up there. I mean, our Wednesday night meeting now probably has about 200 people who are in the BBA. Our Thursday night meeting has about 150 now. And then we have a Monday night meeting in a different area, San Diego. We have a Tuesday night meeting now. We've got a Friday night meeting. We actually have a possibilities for getting VBA every day in the week. And when you walk in, people will have their judgments, their preconceived notions, if they came from other programs, and, you know, they kind of like, well, what is this? And this is culty and whatever. And they leave 9 times out of 10, like, whoa, there is something so powerful and potent and energized and life-affirming, and, like, there is a light in these people's eyes. I want what these people have. And it happens over and over again, and our fellowship continues to grow and grow. And it's mutual. It's like there is a spirit of the fellowship, and then there's a fellowship of the spirit. And so there is an absolute, you go there, and you have this, like, spirit of the fellowship, and you're seeing people and whatever, and it's fun, spirit of the fellowship. But then there is a fellowship of the spirit. There are people who, When you are lit up by God, you can recognize somebody else who is lit up by God, and you actually create a fellowship and a bond in that, and it helps to raise your whole, like, vibration. And so that continues to, like, we continue to experience that. And this all happened because one woman did one workshop in San Diego. She said, I want to create the fellowship that I desire. And she asserted it, and she said, this is what's happening, and I'm going to create a fellowship, and so I'm going to create a workshop. And so she did a workshop in center in downtown San Diego, and she did a workshop in North County in San Diego. And that first host of people that came in, you know, 10, 20, 30, 40, I don't know how many people it was, they all got through the steps together. None of them had done this work before. She had been taken through by somebody, but she was like, it was like, you know, she wasn't like some, like, sophisticated, you know, BBA-er. Everybody was split up into step partners who, like, those people hadn't done the BBA before. So everybody was essentially a newcomer to the BBA. And they got free. And after those 6 months, they established meetings in those locations, and that's how their fellowships grew. And that was, I think, 8, maybe Suzanne, you can clarify for me, it's either 8 or 10 years ago, but now there's these full-fledged, absolutely beautiful fellowships, and so that's really what I would love to see happen all throughout the world, all throughout, you know, like this country, and it starts with you just saying yes to taking one person through, but hopefully there's some of you out there who will say, yeah, I actually want that fellowship in my hometown, and I'm willing to show up and let God move through me so that this can be possible. And I know I've already spoken with some of you. I know that you're doing those things, and I'm here to help you. Oh, my gosh, I'm here to help you if you want to take that leap and really trust in God to carry you through that. I will absolutely, you can reach out to me anytime. So let's flip over to page 91 in that bottom full paragraph. It says, it's just talking about, you know, it's going to, well, over the next 2 pages, really. You want to get the person, so it's like this is talking about the approach and how to, you know, how to interact with that person the first time. I mean, again, like, a lot of this becomes, like, really fast-tracked because oftentimes people will be at a meeting and then they're like, I just want to start doing the work. And they're looking at you for, what does that look like? How does that, like, what do I do? And they're kind of, like, flailing a little bit. And so it's really easy to kind of step into, oh, okay, well, I know everything, and so here we go. But actually what's really beautiful is just to, like, start asking them some questions. And so that's what I do. You know, somebody will say, like, okay, well, you know, I think I need a sponsor. And I'm like, okay, great. Do you have a second? Or, like, maybe we can chat on the phone, but I want to hear a little bit more about, like, what's going on. And I get them to talk, and if they feel, it feels like they kind of don't want to you know, share a lot because they're not yet comfortable, like, sharing, like, some really intimate stuff. Like, I will be happy to launch into, like, you know, the insanity of my disease. And usually just hearing, like, maybe one or two things from them, it helps guide me to what they're really going to, like, connect with. You know, I mean, if I'm speaking with somebody who, like, is a bulimic, like, I'm going to, or is an anorexic, like, I'm going to talk about those are actually two different things. If someone is coming to me and they're anorexic, I'm going to talk more about my restricting because I have a lot of that in my history, and I'm going to focus on certain stories. And if someone's coming to me, you know, talking about their, like, exercise bulimia or their, you know, their eating food out of the, you know, the trash bin that they threw away, like, I'm going to talk to them about my experiences that I relate to with all that stuff. And so I've got no problem, like, to sharing anything. And I let them speak, and I categorically do not, it says in the book, do not, be careful not to brand that person as a compulsive overeater or a restrictor, you know, or, like, whatever. They might say, I'm a this, and that's, you know, that's fine. And, you know, you might even say, well, you know, what's great about this work is that we get to, like, discover our truth, and so we're going to be actually entering into it, like, you know, laying all that aside. But you don't even have to get into that. Like, I mean, I will refer to this, like, I will be educational in that, like, I'll refer to this as an illness, just like it says out of the book, this is fatal. I will talk about the conditions of the mind and the body. You know, I will talk about the hopelessness because I know that there is a solution. And I know that I am not responsible for making them recovered. And so I can point them in the direction of the solution that is available. And I know it's not about me having to deliver something to them. And that is a huge weight off of my shoulders. And it's one of the reasons why I love the process that we do in the BBA, because it's like, hey, you know, you're either going to, like, print out for them or have them print out the sponsorship guide, the idiot's guide, like, everything that you got in preparation for this workshop. And, you know, either get for them or, you know, have them buy the Big Book Awakening supplement. And, like, and they're going to do all of that. You know, you get to just be their guide in that process. And, of course, if they ask how I did it, I will share what, you know, how I did it, how I got free. But I find that unless somebody is, well, I guess it's a little bit different. People will find you who have been in program for a long time. Maybe they are drug and alcohol free, but they're insane with their eating. You're essentially going to attract, like, whoever, like, whatever experience you had, you're going to attract that. That's been my experience. And if you can, in earnest, look someone in the eye and say, there is hope for you, I have a solution, like, that usually is enough. I don't usually have to go into, like, a whole, like, this is how I did it, but I'm happy to. I'm happy to stress the spiritual feature freely if that's going to be of service, and let them know, you know, kind of, like, watch if they're kind of bristling with antagonism and let them know that, like, you know, like, that they don't have to take on any conception that's not theirs, and that, you know, like, I kind of look at that, I'll speak into that. And I also know that some of you are in church groups or in religious affiliations where the people that you might be encountering are super God conscious in a certain way. Like, they're very, very God centered in a certain way. And yet they have these acting out behaviors, and there's, like, this, like, incongruence with the belief that they have versus how they're showing up in life. And it's really, really delicate. And you know, in those situations, like the book guides us on page 93 with what to do. It says, like, this person's religious education and training may be far superior to yours, but they will be curious to learn why their own convictions have not worked and why yours seem to work so well. And this person may be an example of the truth that faith alone is insufficient. And so you're armed with those facts. You know, we spoke about that. We spoke about that in step two and probably even step one. But, like, faith, and oh, actually every step, right? Faith alone is insufficient. To be vital, to be life-giving, faith must be accomplished by self-sacrifice and unselfish constructive action. And so it's really, it's like what we talked about. I have to get unblocked so that I can have access to this power, so that I can rely on this power. And am I believing in God but not relying on God? And I get to see that in all, I get to see that in my life. I get to get free, and I continue to grow in understanding the effectiveness of how to rely more on God. That's all I will share about that. So on page 94, it says, outline the program of action explaining how you made a self-appraisal. I do share about the VBA, like I mentioned before, because I almost kind of want to scare people off because it's a lot of work, and it isn't for everyone, and I used to think it was, and I used to think everyone needed to do it that way, and like, not everyone, not people who do the VBA, like, if you're listening to this call, like, you're a mad dog, and that's great, you know, but, like, not everyone actually wants to seek that fearlessly, and so I want to almost, like, scare them off, letting them know, like, all the things that they need to do, and if they still are like, yes, I'm that desperate, I want to do that, I hear the hope in your message, you're armed with facts, you're speaking differently with, you know, with me, the way, speaking more differently than anyone else that I've ever heard, you know, you could be that person, you could be the light in a room of a fellowship that, you know, of a meeting that is, like, not carrying the message, and you're the one person that's like, wait a second, like, even if you feel like you're, like, you know, what is it, like the one-eyed man in the land of the blind or whatever, it's like you might be the person that is carrying the message of hope and of promise and of recovery and of the solution. And so, like, you get to be that. You get to step into that and then let them know, hey, like, this is the program of recovery that I know about, and this is how I take people through. And of course, make it clear that this person is not under any pressure, doesn't need to see you again if he or she doesn't want to. And you shouldn't be offended if they want to call it off. I used to get offended. I used to take that kind of stuff personally. I used to be super attached to people's recovery and really, like, wanted my sponsees to all have amazing recovery because then it made me look good. And, you know, that's just one of the things that we do, and, you know, we've all been there, and it's like, but we need to get over it because it really isn't about us. And it says you've probably been more help to them than they have been to you. I don't know if it says it right here in this reading or if it says it a little bit further on, but I have experienced that over and over again. And I do, after I share with people, like, this is how the BBA, this is how I do the work, I take people through in this way, I say, go think about that. Like, go take that to consideration in some quiet time and come back to me. So it says on the top of page 95, like, give them a chance to think it over. I do that. I lay it all out, and then I'm like, you need to go and consider. And if they come back, then, you know, then that's good. And if they don't, then that's okay. It says at the end of that paragraph, never talk down to a compulsive overeater or restrictor from any moral or spiritual hilltop. Simply lay out the kit of spiritual tools for her inspection. Show her how they worked for you. Offer her friendship and fellowship. Tell her that if she wants to get well, you will do anything to help. And I think that's pretty self-explanatory, but I felt it important to read it because that is how I approach this stuff. And there's sometimes I feel like there can be this hierarchy that starts to happen in these sponsor-sponsee relationships, and this sort of like deferring to one sponsor. And while on the one hand it can be super, like a really, really positive thing, like reaching out and connecting, like that interaction, I just always want to make sure that if I'm the one that's receiving a call from a sponsee or from a step partner or a friend in program, that I'm always reflecting back to them that, like, to help to build their own trust in the guidance that they're getting inside. And so I can be here as a resource, but it's really about that person finding their truth so that they can start to cultivate their own sixth sense and their own trust in the guidance that's coming from within. And I get so many times, like, people kind of, like, we have all our stories about each other. We have our stories about each other, but we have our stories about ourselves. And we have these stories like, I'm not smart, or I just don't get this, or I'm not good at, you know, inventory, or I'm not good at, for me it was a long time, like, I don't have enough experience with amends, or I'm not good at this, or, you know, and we have all these stories, I don't even know where I was going with that, and they hold us back from being of service, is what I will say, because I have no idea where I was going with that. I am not a therapist to my sponsees. I am not a banker. I'm not a therapist. I'm not here to manage anything for you. I can't manage anything for me, so I'm certainly not here to manage anything for you, and I don't need that. Yeah, and this was actually important, probably more for me than anybody else, on the bottom of page 95. If she thinks she can do the job in some other way or prefers some other spiritual approach, we encourage her to follow her own conscience. We have no monopoly on God. We merely have an approach that worked with us. But point out that we compulsive eaters and restrictors have much in common, and that you would like, in any case, to be friendly and let it go at that. That was really hard for me because I wanted to help everybody who was how I perceived, like, dying in the rooms of other 12-step programs. And I wanted to be like, there's a solution here. You need to do it this way. And, you know, no one wants, like, an evangelist and, you know, or somebody who's, like, you know, on a soapbox. And I've been that many, many times over. And so that part of the book is actually probably speaking to me more than anyone. And it says on the top of 97, like, helping others is the foundation stone of your recovery. And so it's interesting because on page 17, it told me that the foundation of my recovery was, you know, this fellowship, this belief in God, the circle and triangle, the common problem, the common solution was this foundation. But now it's saying that helping others is the foundation of our recovery. So again, it's that full cycle of bringing the 12 step into the first step, and it seals it cements it in this kind of interconnected chain, and that continues to refortify my spiritual structure. A kindly act once in a while isn't enough. You have to act the Good Samaritan every day if need be, you know, practicing these principles into all our affairs. Now, this goes into a paragraph that doesn't work for me because I have way too much codependency issues to take on any of the things that they discuss in this paragraph. So for me, again, it's like I create healthy boundaries. I water my own garden. put my own oxygen mask on first. Like, I self-care, whatever those analogies are. I need to make sure, you know, my prayer meditation comes before my reach out call to somebody. I need to make sure that I'm doing my program. I also, this has happened to me when I'm in the step process, is that I will start to prioritize other people's step work over my own step work. And I really, really need to flip that around. Because that's like my step work, my prayer, my meditation, and all the ways that I care for my body and my environment is absolutely like part of my self-care and part of service. So I don't do these things here that it talks about on page 97. But in the middle of page 98, I do like this. It says, it just reminds us, right? Job or no job, wife or no wife, you know, partner or partner, we simply do not stop compulsively overeating or restricting so long as we place dependence on other people ahead of dependence upon God. And they're sharing this in the context of working with others and talking about the person that you're working with. But I just like to read that and remind myself for me, because where am I placing dependence upon people or stuff, you know, or what I think I know, what I'm attached to, my story, my identity, versus just dependence on God. Burn the idea into the consciousness of every person. And so it's telling me to burn the idea into my consciousness that I can get well regardless of anyone, that the only condition is that I trust in God and clean house. There it is. Burn the idea into my consciousness so that I can transmit that message that anybody can get well regardless of what's happening around them or anyone else around them. The only condition is that they trust in God and clean house. And then it goes into relationships and, you know, strained relationships. I mean, talks about divorce and separation or just strained relationships. And this is really where we get to take all of our principles into all of our affairs. I think I said this on the last call, but I get a much more clear experience and reality check of how I'm practicing these principles in all my affairs, not just in how I'm interacting in the fellowship. That's easy. That's a cakewalk. But it's in how I'm interacting with my family and my loved ones, those people who are closest to me in my life. How am I acting with them? How am I acting with the people who I intimately see on a daily basis, the people that I work with? You know, how am I carrying these principles into all my affairs in those areas? And that's the edge. And that's really where I get to experience my spiritual growth. And this journey is, you know, we talked a little bit about this at the end of step 9, but, you know, it says, though her family, at the bottom of page 98, though her family may be at fault in many respects, she should not be concerned about that. She should concentrate on her own spiritual demonstration. Argument and fault finding are to be avoided like the plague, and this is why we get that prayer on page 83, which is, you know, please show me the way of patience, tolerance, kindness, and love, you know, towards my family and really towards all, including myself. Because, like, I mean, this is more just like a way of living now. Going forward, I have seen the blessings in my own family. As I let go, as I stepped off the soapbox, stopped being evangelical, stopped trying to change people or point out where they're being spiritually unfit. Nobody likes that, P.S., if you didn't know. And just started living this program, showing up as that expression of God's love. It's been incredible to see how every relationship in my life has transformed and how my family actually has transformed. So the last little bit here is going on to page 100 here, the very first full paragraph. Both you and the new person must walk day by day in the path of spiritual progress, if you persist, remarkable things will happen. That is true. That has happened for me. When we look back, we realize the things which came to us when we put ourselves in God's hands were better than anything we could have planned. Follow the dictates of a higher power, and you will presently live in a new and wonderful world, no matter what your present circumstance. That is so true. It is so true. And it does not matter what my physical body looks like. It does not matter what my bank account looks like. This has come true for me. I will live in a new and wonderful world no matter what my present circumstance. It's true. It happens. It goes into being spiritually fit and being able to do all sorts of things that compulsive eaters and restrictors are not supposed to do. This was hard for me in the beginning. You know, it tells me on, it says, a compulsive eater restrictor who cannot meet these, which I'm about to share, still has the mind of a compulsive eater and restrictor. There's something the matter with their spiritual status. They're still in their spiritual malady enough that they're experiencing that they can't be free. But what they're saying here is that when you're free and you're not fighting anything anymore, you can go freely where food is served. Or, you know, you can look freely in a magazine that might show bodies of thin women that you aspire to be like or whatever it is. You don't have to avoid having things in your home. You don't have to avoid showing up at places. In the beginning, like, my mind wasn't clear. And I needed to be like, no, like, there's no reason for me to go to an all-you-can-eat buffet. No, thank you. There's no reason for me to go to, you know, whatever. Like this particular, like, barbecue where I don't even know, just whatever examples. I felt like I wasn't fully free. And today I can be around those things and they actually look like non-foods to me. Like, I'm not efforting or trying. I'm just like, oh, that's just not something. It's like a non-food. It's like, oh, that's plastic or that's, you know, whatever. It's just, I don't have a charge around it. And, so I'm not avoiding places. And then it also says at the bottom of page 101, it's also important to ask yourself, do I have any, like, legitimate reason for going into this place? You know, because it could also be like, oh, yeah, I'm just going to kind of browse. I'm just going to walk into this little cafe because I, you know, have some time, and it's like, oh, they happen to have my favorite dessert, and oh, this and oh, that, and it's like, well, I get to ask myself, do I have any good social business or personal reason for going into this place, or am I expecting to steal a little vicarious pleasure from the atmosphere of such a place? If you can answer these questions satisfactorily, you need have no apprehension. Go or stay away, whichever seems best. But be sure, and this, again, there are these lines in this chapter that are, for me, like, this is just a way of being in my program. Be sure you are on solid spiritual ground before you start. Before you start anything, before you start your day, before you start anything, that your motive in going is thoroughly good. Do not think of what you will get out of the occasion. Think of what you can bring to it. If you are shaky, you had better work with another compulsive eater restrictor. It tells me a little bit further down on the page, while you are acting out in your disease, you are withdrawing from life little by little. And now, second paragraph up from the bottom, now you're employed by God. Now your job is to be at the place where you may be of maximum helpfulness to others. So never hesitate to go anywhere you might be helpful. It says, keep on the firing line of life, and these motives and God will keep you unharmed. It goes into a little bit about keeping, like, food, triggering foods in your home. I personally, I mean, it does say, like, some of us still serve it to our friends, provided that they are not, you know, suffering with those problems with acting out with food. Some of us think that they shouldn't serve to anyone. Each family, you know, each person needs to make that choice or decision on their own. I personally don't find it very supportive to keep, like, trigger foods in the house. I don't, you know, I've gotten really, really clear on how nut butters and seed butters, like, aren't something that really works in my life. And, you know, you guys were all there with me on the play-by-play of that. And that's not something I keep in the house at all anymore. And I don't, like, there's no need for me to keep those snacky things. I know that some families are like, oh, well, I need to have these things in the house for my kids or for, you know, for my wife or my husband or my partner, or, you know, or I live with people and I can't control what they have in the house. There's a lot of different varieties of things. And so just bring God into that conversation and just ask to be guided to, like, what is going to be of the highest service to all. I certainly, you know, it talks about having this attitude of hatred or intolerance about overeating or restricting or kind of like, you know, kind of like negatively like speaking about all of that. And again, I've been moved to a place of compassion and tolerance. And so that transmits out into my attitudes, right? And so because I'm not fighting anything or anyone. And so I just see it as, okay, like, there, yeah, we have this overeating thing. Like, a lot of people have it, and I don't overly judge or criticize it. It's like it just is, and I can meet the conversation with compassion and love, and also with a lot of brutal honesty and willingness to, like, really, really get into the nitty gritty of, like, what needs to be unblocked and what needs to be removed. And I don't have to do that through the lens of criticism and judgment and naysaying. And the last line here, last two lines of the book, are of the first 103 pages at least. After all, our problems were of our own making. Food and restricting were only a symbol, and we have stopped fighting anything or anyone. We have to. So, with all of that said, that was a lot of talking. I'd like to open the call up. I'd love to hear from some of you about your own experience, about how you sponsor, any questions that people have, and any comments that you want to make. Go ahead and unmute yourself by pressing star 6.
Hi, it's Jan.
Hi, Jan.
Hi.
You there?
I have a question.
Hi, sorry. Go ahead.
I have a question. You said something that it struck a chord, but I can't remember the particulars of it. It was the part about where step 12 is interwoven back into step 1. Do you remember what that was, and can you repeat that?
I was talking about, like, the cycle. Well, I talked about it a couple times. So, are you talking about where I was talking about it as a foundation? As a foundation? Or were you talking about when I was talking about it in the very beginning? When I was just talking about, like, kind of, like, being, like, a cycle? And, because I sort of talked about it throughout. Do you remember?
More, I think, the foundation.
The foundation. Okay. Yeah. So it is, so on the top of page 97, the first full paragraph there, it says, never avoid these responsibilities, but be sure you are doing the right thing if you assume them. Helping others is the foundation stone of your recovery. And on page 17, you know, we've been talking about this, like, this structure that we're building. And have you, you know, is your foundation solid? You know, is your, like, have you been mixing mortar without sand? You know, how is the, like, what's the quality of the cement of your program? And, you know, like on the bottom of page 17, it says the powerful cement that binds us is a mixture of equal parts of the fellowship, our common problem in this book, our common solution. You know, later on we look at the cornerstone and the keystone and that kind of stuff. And so we get this sense of like a spiritual foundation, both in the first step and also in the 12th step. And so in that way, for me, I see the 12th step as the cycle that kind of grounds me back into the first step and, like, re-fortifies the first step for me. And that, like, does that make more sense?
Yes, that's perfect. Thank you, Deb.
Sure. Anybody else have a comment or a question or want to share their experience with sponsoring or maybe how they do sponsoring? Anyone want to speak honestly about how they don't want to sponsor?
Hello?
Hello?
Can you hear me?
Hello. Yes.
Hi. This is Nathan from London.
Hello. Hello, Nathan. So glad that you're here.
Yeah, so am I. Yeah, about not sponsoring. Well, I think I just completed step three today with a step buddy in the UK. And I'm feeling for the first time that I may be in a position eventually where I feel confident that I can help someone once I get through this process, because I've been through the steps about twice now. Well, one, yeah, and I did sponsor a few times, but I always felt that there was something lacking. So I just wanted to share that and express my gratitude for this workshop. And for all that you do, it's very powerful. And thank you, Debbie, and everyone who makes it possible. I just pass on that. Thanks.
Thank you so much, Nathan. You guys just did your third step, I think, right?
I beg your pardon?
I think you guys just did your third, your step three, right?
Yeah, we just did it earlier today, yeah.
Yeah. That's wonderful. No, I got an email about it, so I was.
Great.
That's so cool. Yeah. That's wonderful. Thank you so much, and it's just been an absolute honor. And I'm so excited for you to sprout and plant a BBA fellowship in London. Oh my gosh, I'd love that. And I think I put this in the last message to people, but like I know I'm going to say something that is completely, I don't even know how, but like God will find the way if this is God's will. But if somebody wants to like create a fellowship in their area and they want to gather people together and they like, you know, if there is like a weekend workshop or something that I can do to come out and kind of like get things like, you know, started and kind of pass on the baton, let me know. And I know we have people in New Zealand, and I know we've got people in England, and we've got people in Israel, and we've got people all over the country, and we've got people in Canada, and, you know, like, and I'm putting it out there to all because I really believe that, you know, we have a solution and that I'm willing to be of service in that way. Anybody else want to share their experience or have a question?
Hello, Deb.
Yes.
How do you know when you're ready to be a sponsor?
You're ready.
Are you telling me that?
Yeah, you are. Yeah.
Okay.
You are. You are ready. You're ready to speak at meetings. You are. You're ready to speak at meetings. You're ready to be a sponsor. Yeah, absolutely. You are.
Okay, Deb, thank you so much. Love you.
I love you, too. How do you know? It's interesting. It's like I feel like there is that moment where we kind of, like, turn to someone. In fact, I had someone in a friend in the BBA fellowship who I said, "Hey, when are you gonna be a 15-minute speaker up on the podium?" Because it's kind of an honor. I don't know. It's a cool thing. It's a really cool thing to be asked to speak at this meeting, and he's like, "I don't know. I guess when somebody asks me, you know." And we do have that. It's like, well, gosh, I don't know. I mean, I guess if somebody asks me, then I'm ready. And that will happen in sponsorship. And, you know, you also get to say, well, gosh, I can reflect back that, you know, I've actually done this work. And I'm in the process of trusting and relying on God more and more. And, you know, I want to go further and I want to take someone through for my recovery and for their recovery. You know, and we get to like step into that. So yeah. Thank you for stepping into your recovery and your freedom, Deb. Who else has a comment or a question? That was a great question, by the way. Okay. Well, we can. I will happily end the call early. And gosh, I'm not even sure. This has just been so incredible. I just want to thank you so much for being here with me. Whether you've been live or in the recordings, like I feel you, and I am so honored to be on this journey with you, and I'm so excited for you to experience the freedom that I have accessed in this program, like the absolute freedom and happiness and joy and peace and serenity, and just like there's so much joy that I want to transmit to you, and I know that it's for you to get that experience yourself, and I just want to thank you for being here and for catapulting me into an even greater level of freedom that I didn't even know was possible. So expect to probably get a few more emails from me and, of course, the playback from today's call. And then you can still reach out to me if you have questions or things come up. Oh, I did have somebody ask about, well, what if I'm doing a fifth step and I'm not, you know, like it's now a few months down the line and whatever. You know, reach out to me or just to go onto the BBA Works website and contact any of the people on the contact list there, like I mentioned earlier. Whether I can help you or whether somebody else can help you, you know, there are people who will listen to your fifth step and who can support you through that stuff. And, you know, feel free to reach out to the people who I listed in earlier emails about, you know, the ones you can call to ask questions about inventory,
You know, all those people are available to help as well. And again, if they can't personally help you, they can connect you with somebody who will. So there is actually a fellowship that is around you, even if you're not feeling that physically in your home or in your hometown. There is a fellowship. We have created something. Like, there's a network now. There's an international network of Food to Freedom friends, and you're a part of it. So thank you for being here. So let's close the meeting with the serenity prayer, which I never normally say, but it feels really sweet to end this whole workshop with that. God, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Amen. Thank you so, so much. I love you all. Bye-bye.